This is TalkBack, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309.
This is News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. KGVO, Missoula's news and weather station.
Hey, welcome everybody. It is the Friday 1 hour edition of TalkBack. TalkBack this morning is brought to you by our friends at Y West Storage, a secure, flexible self-storage in Missoula. For to reserve your unit today, call Y West at 406-510-0590. These are all 406 numbers, of course. Quality Seamless Gutters of Montana, expert gutter installation and repair. For a free quote, call 728-4002. Bruckner's Truck and Equipment, heavy-duty truck sales, parts and service. Call 541-9097. Busy Bees Cleaning Service, commercial cleaning you can trust. Call Busy Bees at 550-3219. Get a free estimate. And by Gomer's Diesel, diesel repair parts and service in Missoula. Give them a call today at 728-7620.
The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
Welcome aboard, everybody. It's the Friday edition of TalkBack. Good morning, Mr. Nick Christensen. How are you, sir?
Good morning.
All right, and we have Matt Jennings joining us on the phone this morning. That is our tradition every Friday, and find out what's going on with the crime report. So, Matt, good morning and welcome, sir.
Good morning, Peter. Thanks so much. Unfortunately, we had a very tragic week this week in Missoula County. A 16-year-old girl was shot and killed last weekend in a negligent homicide case where a 15-year-old was a shooter. And frankly, we've just been reeling from some of the trauma of that all week. Peter, acknowledging the loss to her family, our hearts are just broken for them and everybody that knew her. Also did want to thank once again law enforcement, though, for just the incredible efforts and the things that they have to go through. First responders as well, as they immediately showed up on scene, did everything that they possibly could. And while she couldn't be saved, I just so admire and respect the work that all those folks do when they show up on the scene. So we will keep trying to figure out exactly what the contributing factors that led up to that moment were, but young people with alcohol, drugs, and guns leads to trauma, and it's something that we need to continue to address in our community and our society. And unfortunately, this week overall was fairly violent, and we never quite know what the patterns are, but we'll have a couple really quiet weeks like we did the last 2 weeks, and then we jump up to 21 felonies that were filed this week when we only had 12 last week and 10 the week before. So this was the most violent week that we've had in Missoula County in 2026. We had 9 pretty violent offenses. 6 of those were family violence, partner family member assaults, or gun violence against partners. We had 3 non-family violence incidents. And we had a lot of drug cases this week. I've said this a few times, but a couple years ago, we were really in a fentanyl epidemic in our community. We were getting a lot of overdoses and things associated with those opioids. We aren't seeing as much fentanyl come through Missoula right now, or at least through the cases that we're seeing in my office, but we are seeing another resurgence of methamphetamine. And that is a particular drug that leads to a lot of these offenses. What we find is in a lot of the interactions that law enforcement have with people that committed another crime, whether it's violent or a property crime or something else, that they're either under the influence of meth or they have it on their person. And we've got a lot more evidence now about the impacts that methamphetamine has on people's brains, and it just changes them completely. And 20 years ago, we did a really good job in the state of Montana convincing young people to never even try it once, not once, with the Montana Meth Project. And really, that needs to be the message to everybody in this community, because too many people think they're experimenting with something, and their life gets completely off track and sometimes can't get back on. But we're as busy as always, Peter, and doing what we can to help with our law enforcement partners, keeping the community safe and bringing justice to victims.
Well, Matt, just real quick, how can the public help you in the fight against these drugs, if you wouldn't mind, just quickly?
Yeah, well, you know, we're at the end of the process, Peter, and family and friends. When you're watching people struggling, you got to reach out, you got to intervene, you got to encourage them to get help before they start getting down that path where there's no coming back. And addiction's a real thing. Everybody can experience it, whether it's alcohol or drugs or something else. And it's human and it's a disease. But we need partners out there in the community addressing it, being willing to talk about it, being able to offer help.
Got it. Matt, as always, a pleasure. Thank you so much for the report. We appreciate it, sir. You have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks.
And we will be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Stay with us. More of TalkBack is coming right up here in just a few minutes on this Friday 1 hour edition. So please stay with us. Hey, welcome back, everybody. It is the Friday, April 17th edition of TalkBack. Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen, producing TalkBack right over there, taking your phone calls this morning. And we are always privileged to have with us Dr. Peter Kolb of MSU Extension Forestry here in the studio. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. My privilege to be here.
All right. So now I understand that you are basically our go-to guy when it comes to forestry and trees. So what's going on in your world right now?
Oh, well, lots of things. I mean, of local interest, if you're seeing trees leaf out, the first ones to leaf out are the willow species. They're kind of yellow looking. And they can afford to leaf out early because they're real good resprouters. So if they get caught by a late frost, which is common in Montana, they just freeze back and they sprout back very prolifically. Cottonwoods are starting to leaf out as well. Our smarter trees are waiting, you know, another month or so. So oaks will be the last ones to leaf out.
I have two maple trees. One of them is getting an early start. The other one's still kind of hanging back. So I'm not sure how that works. They're both exactly the same tree.
Well, it's just like having two people, you know. Some will get up at 6 and some will get up at 7. Some will get up at 4:30 in the morning. Who knows?
I hear you.
So, but yeah, there's genetic variability in trees, and you, there's a selection process in Montana. If you come out of dormancy too early in the spring, you're going to get frozen back. And a couple of years ago when we had that extreme freeze, about half the Siberian elms in eastern Montana died. I mean, they just got flash frozen. So, and I mean, so you just look at our weather right now. Sunday, it's supposed to be 72 degrees.
Right.
I was in Kalispell yesterday participating in the Montana Logging Association logger training, and we were out measuring trees and getting 2 inches of snow on us.
Wow.
So, you know,
welcome to Montana, right?
Right, yeah. And I mean, it's kind of fun in a certain way. It's more fun to get back in your truck with a heater on after that kind of a experience. But, you know, plug-in from Montana Logging Association. Our loggers are phenomenal people. I really enjoy working with them. And we put on a week-long training for them every spring where we run them through the same planning process, the same evaluation process we do with landowners and refreshers for foresters. So, you know, many of them are almost qualified foresters. They know their tree species. We teach them about ecology, role of fire, logging practices, role of disturbance, which can be good or bad. And they write a management plan on a forested property, and then they work with the landowner and see if the landowner likes it. And I always learn a lot because, you know, being in the logging business these days, it is a stressful job. These guys, just the basic equipment, you know, they got...
it's very expensive.
They got $1 million in loans out there, you know, for the harvesters and log trucks and the forwarders and, you know, all the things you need to successfully do some logging. And, you know, it used to be anybody with a chainsaw and a pickup truck, you know, and maybe a skidder, they could log, but you can't make a living doing that anymore. So, you know, there's times like this year with this very mild winter. The ground didn't freeze in a lot of places, and sensitive areas, they like to log with the ground frozen to minimize the impacts of the logging equipment.
Right.
And so that trickles down to the mills. The mills like to stock up on enough logs to make it through what's called spring breakup when the loggers aren't active. So they got to sometimes go 2-3 months without having any logs delivered to the mill. And with this winter, many of them could not build the log decks they need to keep running. So it's a stressful business, even if you really know what you're doing and, you know, you have a good plan and all of that.
So when we have a stretch like this where the weather gets unusually mild, what's the plan? I mean, just have to roll with the punches or what?
Yeah, well, I mean, you work by elevation too. So higher elevations, the ground is still frozen. There's still some snow on the ground.
Right.
So they try to complete the lower elevation areas earlier and then transition to maybe higher elevations. But it all depends on the road. So a lot of the logging roads, when you're hauling 20 tons of logs down a road, if that road isn't frozen and if it's saturated with water, you can't operate on anymore. You destroy the road. So, you know, it's kind of like harvest time. When they can log, they're working 24 hours a day, and then all of a sudden they can't log, and, you know, then they're doing equipment maintenance and all of that.
But, so is it boom or bust or boom and bust, or how does that work?
It's a lot of fortitude, okay? And, you know, the best laid plans, Mother Nature can wreak havoc with those, you know? So These days, the small logging contractor has a harder time. They don't have the capacity to absorb those boom and bust cycles. So we have tend to have larger logging contractors. We're getting some younger people in there, but workforce is also really important, you know, and many of them will hire and train people to run the equipment. And so a lot of the we had 16 loggers participate in our workshop this spring, and many of them were younger, and so they're sent by their company, by their contractor, to learn the ropes and get some additional education and all of that. But like a lot of other businesses, and you know, just following up on the crime report, you know, they have one requirement, and that is show up to work sober, you know. You know, with all the drugs that are out there in the community, I mean, you can't have someone running an equipment that's high on meth or something like that.
I was just going to say, when you're working with some very, very potentially dangerous equipment, and a lot of it's done by hand, and if you don't have your you know, mental capabilities at 100%, you can really hurt yourself or somebody else.
Yeah, and, you know, rolling a $200,000 dozer down a mountainside is also not good on the checkbook either. But, you know, so it is now a high-tech industry, and our logging contractors are all well-educated and very responsible, hardworking people. And I love working with them because, you know, they get the reality of things, and they want to do the best job out there. So, you know, they're an important component of Montana economy and maintaining our forests. I mean, it used to be, I mean, forestry has changed so much. We used to have an emphasis on growing trees for harvest. Now we have an emphasis on protecting the environment, protecting the ecosystem, mm-hmm. and logging is integrated in that. It's part of reducing fire hazard. It's part of getting the right tree species on the right site. So you don't have all rot-susceptible or disease-susceptible late successional or shade-tolerant tree species that also tend to burn a lot more readily than our early pioneer tree species like ponderosa pine and larch. So, you know, we're logging is part of restoring an ecosystem and also maintaining it in something that is resilient to all of these weather patterns that seem to be hitting us. And, of course, this year, windstorms, late snowstorms have wreaked havoc on the forest. If you're driving down the interstate and you look at the mountainside,
right.
keep your eyes on the road, of course. But
if you're a passenger, yeah.
And if you look at the mountainside, you're going to see a lot of big swaths of trees that were just flattened.
Right.
And the problem is, if we don't get those out, they're breeding grounds for bark beetles that can grow into epidemics, and they can start attacking live trees.
We are going to come right back. And the phone, by the way, the phone lines are open. If you have a question for Dr. Kolb, he's here to answer them. 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. We hope you'll stay with us. We have more with Dr. Peter Kolb coming up here in just a few moments. And again, the phone lines are open and free. So if you have a question, give us a call. Thank you. Hey, welcome back to Talk Back, everybody. Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen taking your phone calls for Dr. Peter Kolb, who's our special guest here in the studio, MSU Extension Forestry. And you got big doings coming up. What's going on, Dr. Kolb?
Well, not me specifically, but every year in April, we have the Montana Forestry Days that's held out at Fort Missoula.
Right.
And so
it is a very big event, folks.
it's very entertaining. Yeah. It's very interesting because we're talking about logging. But Friday, April 24th and Saturday, April 25th, we will have active demonstrations out at Fort Missoula where we have a, you know, old-time logging forestry set up there. We have a very dedicated individual, ex-forester started with Champion, Plum Creek, Pyramid, worked for a lot of different entities, graduate of University of Montana.
Wow, great.
Way back when. Scott Keene, and he's kind of taken charge of that. And Scott's passion is restoring old logging equipment. And so there's going to be demonstrations of like a 1918 tractor that was used for skidding logs. We have the old Shea locomotive out there that used to run and haul logs up the Blackfoot Railroad. But even more entertaining is we're going to have logger sports, if you've never heard of that. So way back when they were cutting down trees with crosscut saws and axes and things like that,
right.
There were many, many skills that were very specialized. So, of course, crosscut sawing, and they have what's a double buck, two people, single buck, Jack and Jill, which is a guy and a gal, axe throwing, you know, because you do the undercut with an axe.
I always think of Ed Ames.
There we go. And you know, when you go from tree to tree, it was easier that rather than dragging all your equipment over, you just fling your axe and stick it in the next tree you're going to cut down, and that's where axe throwing came from. You know, and maybe warding off grizzly bears, who knows? Then pole climbing. So they used to find a big major tree, and someone would climb up, cut the top off of it, and then they'd attach cables to it. And they would use those cables to drag logs out of the forest, because if you can get the log free of the ground, it's a lot easier. And, you know, on these steep slopes, cable logging was essential to safely get logs off of steep slopes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're going to have pole climbing. And so Friday is universities have logger sports clubs. And so University of Montana logger sports team is going to be competing against other teams from Idaho and California and Northern Arizona, all of that.
Wow. They're coming from a long way off.
Oh, yeah. No, this is a big deal.
Great.
And log burling, you know. So when they were hauling logs down the Blackfoot, you'd have the river dogs or the river rats, and their job was when the logs would beach, they'd free them and put them back in the current, or when you get a log jam, they'd have to climb out there on the logs and try to unjam them, which is incredibly dangerous and hazardous work.
Yeah, don't tell your mother you're doing that.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes they'd have to put a dynamite charge out there to free up a blockage and things like that. So all of those skills that used to be really important became a kind of a competition, you know, who could do it the best, you know, and you know, who is the bull of the woods, so to speak.
Right.
And so Friday is the students, and on Saturday is the Pro-Am. So these are professional logger sports competitors, and they compete in Australia and Europe and all over the place. And these guys are absolutely phenomenal. You know, I mean, they can chop, and they're using a special axe, you know, that's surgically sharp.
Right.
You know, so you can literally shave with it. But they can chop through an 18-inch, 20-inch diameter log in like 15 seconds, you know. And it's pretty amazing to watch them do that. And pole climbing, I mean, you would think, okay, you see a telephone repair used to go, you know, use hooks to climb up a telephone pole. These guys race up the poles. And so the students' chapter on Friday, they just race to the top. And these are very tall poles. But the professionals, they race to the top. And they have to come down. So, I mean, imagine a sprinter sprinting 100-yard dash. Well, they're doing that up a pole. And when they come down, they kind of almost free fall. They touch the stem maybe 2-3 times on the way down. And that's
where moms and dads need to turn around and look the other way. Right.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, so when they're climbing with spurs, that leaves splinters on the side of those stems, you know. So if you're not careful, you're going to need a few big Band-Aids. but no, I mean, they're professionals. They know what they're doing. There are some hazards associated with it. I mean, it's a dangerous sport. The choppers all wear steel mesh toe skirts and things like that because you miss with your speed axe and half your foot is missing. I mean, there's no nicking yourself there.
Wow.
Of course, you know, they rarely miss their mark. These guys practice and practice and practice, and you know, they have a pattern, so they count how many times they chop and a specific pattern. So, you know, maybe 5 chops to a side, and then they flip around and boom, they're through. So if you it's a really good time. There's food trucks out there, so you can get some food. Fort Missoula, the forestry area, has become quite entertaining just on your own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have the old, like I said, the Shea engine, but also the cars. So the loggers used to live in these cars that would get transported around. And they had a library that went with them. So believe it or not, the loggers actually knew how to read. And they read a lot of books because, you know, you're out with a bunch of guys most of the year out in the woods. And, you know, there's other than throwing axes and gambling, I mean, you got to do something. So, again, you know, that's coming up in a couple of weekends. So you get a chance, even if you just want to go for an hour. They're going to run the old steam sawmill there.
It's free, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's totally free to watch, and it's quite fascinating.
And bring the kids and the grandkids because they have an opportunity to see things, you know, the way they used to be, how people used to earn a living, and some still do. In that particular profession. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Catherine is waiting to visit with you. And all of our other phone lines are open, by the way. Dr. Peter Kolb joining us here in the studio this morning, MSU Extension Forestry. We're talking about, we just talked about Forestry Days, which is coming up this coming weekend, next weekend, right?
Right.
All right.
So, April 24th and 25th.
Got it. All right. And that'll be over at Fort Missoula. So stay with us. We're going to come right back with more of Talk Back right after this quick timeout. Hey, we're back on Talk Back on this Friday edition, one-hour edition of Talk Back. Joining us in the studio, Dr. Peter Kolb, MSU Extension Forestry, and Catherine has been waiting very patiently through the break. So, Catherine, good morning. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. Sounds like you were describing a logging rodeo is what it looks. It sounds like, you know, because rodeos are just the sporting equivalent of all cowboy activities. So,
you know, that's a wonderful comparison. That's exactly what it is. It's a logging rodeo. You nailed it.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, you know, you were talking about all of the bug infestation, that when you have all those down trees, and that for many, many years now, every time there was an attempt to the Forest Service to have companies clear out some of that infestation, you know, the downed trees, environmental groups would issue lawsuits or would start lawsuits against it to stop it from happening. Is that still going on as much as it was? It just seems I haven't heard much about that lately in the last few years. So is that still going on as much as it used to be, or has that idea kind of died down, and an understanding of the danger of having so many downed trees just lying there with the bug infestations causing problems? Does that make sense?
It does, and it's a great question. Yeah. And I could commend you on having great faith on humanity's ability to learn. Unfortunately, experience has taught me not to have that faith. So a quick answer is still just as many lawsuits as there used to be. The difference is a lot of those lawsuits is going to be determined by the judges that are hearing them.
Right.
And who appointed those judges, and if they're elected judges, because we have a lot of appointed judges and we also have a lot of elected judges, and the appointed judges are awfully in there for life. So once you have someone in place, especially with federal lawsuits against the federal government, so they go to federal district court, our infamous Judge Malloy, for example. And if that judge has a certain bias, a lot of those lawsuits are going to gain traction. They're not going to get tossed out for a variety of reasons. I think now I'll retract a little bit. I think people really have learned a lot. I think the forestry industry has learned a lot, the logging industry. So we've all – I mean, the pressure to do the right thing is important. And the ability to sue the federal government is important because they're not always doing things the way things ought to be done, and there needs to be public input into all of that. So I commend the true environmental groups. And that term, I use that pretty loosely, because just because you're suing someone for wanting to log doesn't mean you're an environmental group. It means you're a special interest group, and your special interest group might mean that you're against anybody cutting down a tree ever, okay? And then there are people that have those opinions, and they're welcome to them. In my opinion, as a forester, I think that's based on some incomplete and incorrect notions. But how we do things in my career, I mean, I started out in forestry back in the early 80s, and back then it was simply a timber extraction business. It really was. And we've changed a lot. So forest management now is more of an ecological maintenance, where we're trying to maintain the ecology of these ecosystems, the integrity of them, the water quality, the wildlife habitat. And harvesting trees is part of that, because nature operates on a boom and bust cycle. But there are still special interest groups, and especially the not in my backyard crowd,
right,
where, yeah, okay, fire hazard reduction is good, but this is my favorite hiking spot, and I don't want to see equipment in there. You know, and I get that. I mean, I've had similar experiences. I think this is also why the Forest Service is going through a major reform right now. If you follow the news at all, a lot of people are up in arms about it. But rather than having a national system based out of D.C., the current Trump administration and the chief of the Forest Service, Tom Schultz, who I know quite well, he was in Montana as a forester for a while. He's saying, okay, this doesn't work. So instead of having regional offices and the ivory tower commanding how federal forests are managed, We're going to have federal guidance, but it is going to the offices are going to be located in the states, and the states will have a lot of say in how the national forests in their state are being managed. And realistically, it's a big experiment. I think it's a welcome one because the way things were working, we're not working. Okay, they're just the backlog was enormous. Our ability to mitigate issues like now the blowdown. I mean, ideally, as a private landowner, you're going to get in there right now and get those logs out.
You
and
bet.
You're either going to sell them to the mill, or you're going to cut them up. You're going to turn them into firewood, and you're going to curtail the ability of bark beetles to build an epidemic population. On federal land, you're looking at, under current rules, you're looking at 10 years
wow.
before you can get something actually
a
done.
A lot of damage can be done in 10 years.
So there's some, and this, reforms have been made. So the Good Neighbor Authority, where the state is actually actively managing some federal lands with federal guidelines and guidance. But, you know, this is being expedited with the reform of the Forest Service.
All right. And so, Catherine, thank you so much for the call. And we're going to come right back after this quick timeout. And we have Rick standing by with another call. We'll be right back after this. We are back. This is TalkBack. 721-1290 is our number. Our special guest here in the studio is Dr. Peter Kolb, MSU Extension Forestry. And we have Rick, who's been waiting through the break. Rick, good morning. You're on with Dr. Kolb. Go ahead.
Hey, hello, Dr. Kolb. I was born into the timber industry. I was born in a little town, the foothills of the Ocheco Mountains in Central Oregon. It was so small, it didn't have a hospital. I was midwifed in a trailer house. And shortly after I was born, my mom told me, Dad, we're going to have to move. I'm not going to raise my kid in a town that doesn't have a school, doesn't have a hospital. So we moved to a town called Prineville. He took a transfer with the company that he had been working for years. Eventually, we moved to Montana and settled down in Darby. He retired from Champion as a sawmill manager. Wasn't nothing about sawmill, and he didn't know. My mom, after I left the house, she, in the summertime, for something to do, she would go to Superior and work for Diamond, earn another lady in a sawmill camp. So my roots in the timber industry go way back. I worked in the timber industry. But I have a friend that lives in Salmon, and he's got a small mill. It's kind of a family-owned operation. They can sell all the wood that they can cut, beans, whatnot. But he went in, and the Forest Service, like, they welcomed him in. Then he says, hey, I want to start out cutting dead and dying timber, burned up timber. And they said, hey, that's fantastic. We need to get this out of the forest. So he sets up his mill, and what does the Forest Service do? They won't sell him any dead or dying timber. They want to sell him green sales. And the problem is that he set up for dead and dying timber, which means he didn't put a dry kiln in. So now he has this extra added expense of trying to get up enough capital to put in a couple dry kilns. And it seems like the Forest Service, they won't keep their word, or I don't know if they won't keep their word. I don't think they understand the complexities. They're bureaucrats. They're not on the ground like my friend is. And he logs out of the Bitterroot National Forest, the Salmon, Chalice, and the Beaverhead. And there's plenty of dead timber, believe me. You've driven from Lost Trail Pass to Wisdom, Montana, and there's miles and miles and miles of burned up timber. And why doesn't the Forest Service want to cooperate on a logical basis with the timber manufacturers? Why do they say, yeah, this is great, we want you to get rid of this dead and dying and this burned up timber? And then once they make a investment, they go back on their word. Are they trying to choke the timber industry out? What little is left? I'll listen to you
good,
on the radio.
Good question. Thank Thanks for the call. Dr. Kolb.
Well, great question. Very complicated answer to that. Okay. So in simplest form, way back when the Forest Service was created, part of its mandate was to support local communities. And so they had all sorts of systems in place, including what was called Green Tag, where local contractor operators say, hey, I found this stand of trees. I could really use those to run my business, to turn them into something useful. And the Forest Service would work with them to set up a timber sale on that. Since the 60s, 70s, the environmental movement, Rachel Carson, Silent Spring, all of that, some needed reforms came into place. But like a lot of things, you know, things will – the pendulum will swing. And in my opinion, it swung way too far. But also the culture of the Forest Service changed. Okay, so it used to be that you got a job with the Forest Service, you entered a district, the district dealt with things, and you lived in you worked in that district and you lived in that community for your life.
Right.
Well, somewhere along the line, someone had the brilliant idea saying, we don't like that. There's favoritism going on.
Hmm.
So in order to get advanced, you got to move. And so you start out as a forestry tech, and if you wanted to become a timber sales manager or a silviculturist or a district ranger, you end up moving across 10 different districts over 20 years. So you never develop those close connections and ties with the community. And again, the theory was so that favoritism would be eliminated by that. The reality is that unless you have a connection to the ecosystem, you understand the ecosystem you're working in, and importantly, you understand the community you're working in, you can't do your job effectively. So the Forest Service transitioned to becoming this elite entity that was above local concerns and local politics. And by golly, we're going to do it the way that's the right way. And the way that's the right way depends on which school I went to and which philosophy I prescribed to.
And who happens to be up at the top bringing those things down, those
and
decisions.
It became very politicized.
Right.
So depending which administration you'd have in, rather than letting a federal organization like the Forest Service be directed by the director and its staff, politicians started to weigh in on all this. And so things like how many trees you cut and where you harvest and the role of harvesting and how you harvesting, which is highly technical and very site-specific, started to get debated in Congress. Well,
oh, that's a forest. Yeah, I've seen one.
Yeah. And so you had, you know, the special interests of Rhode Island and New Jersey determining what happens in Montana forests. And it's not that there were bad people. It's just, you know, they had no clue what they were talking about. And rather than letting the technical people run the show, the politicians started to run the show. So now you had an entity where nobody had a connection with the local community. You had directives that would change depending on which political wind was blowing in what direction. And a lot of this really, really started with the Clinton administration, like it or not, and the Northwest Forest Plan, where he just locked down the Forest Service. And all of a sudden, you know, numerous small timber-dependent communities that had a sawmill, et cetera, died because there were no logs coming out of the forest. And so we've had all of these.
It was an all or nothing type situation.
Right. And so in the meantime, we've had tried to have all these Band-Aids. So court cases, and we try to win them that you can do this. And then it got appealed. No, you can't. And no, grizzly bears are there. So you can't log because it's bad for grizzly bears, which is BS. So you need to have a scientific study to determine the effects of different kinds of harvesting on grizzly bears. Oh, but now we have wolverines too. Someone saw wolverines. So, you know, Endangered Species Act became weaponized. And rather than something that was very useful in protecting and conserving species, it became a tool to stop management actions on forests. And so it turned into this big Gordian knot, or as Jack Ward Thomas, former chief, called it I can't remember what the heck you call it, a totally dysfunctional process.
It was a mess.
A total mess.
Yeah.
And so that's why now finally we're seeing some reforms. And the first reform was trying to get the state involved in federal timber sales, the Good Neighbor Authority. But now there's a big reform going on, and the devil will be in the details. So whether it works or not is going to be a big question.
We're going to come right back. We have a break coming up. Andy is waiting on the phone. We're going to get to his call here in just a moment. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. We are back on Talk Back, final segment with Dr. Peter Kolb joining us here in the studio this morning. Andy is waiting. Andy, good morning. What's your question for Dr. Kolb?
Good morning. Just a little different take on the reorganization of the Forest Service. I think that they've reduced the workforce of the Forest Service by 20%. I understand there's not even a single employee at the Red Rocks National Wildlife Reservation down there by Yellowstone. I think they're trying to... So the Montana GOP has a clause in their platform that says that they want to get the public lands into state hands. As we all know, that's the first step in privatizing our public lands. So just like DeJoy tried to do with the post office during Trump's first administration, I think they're trying to make it so dysfunctional that that we close it down and we find other ways to do it. So the Montana GOP is certainly not for public lands. Zinke stepped forward to help preserve some public lands, but that was also to open it up to mining and such. So I think we should manage our national forest, not with politics, as Peter said, but with science. And the best available science is what we need to be following. But I think this whole privatizing of our public lands is very well supported by the Republicans. The GOP, if you look at the party platform, it clearly states their intention.
Okay, you know,
just a different take on reorganization.
You're offering a very interesting perspective, and right off the bat, I will vehemently disagree with you. Okay, there is absolutely no effort to privatize federal lands. Nobody wants to privatize federal lands. We all value them very highly for what they do. The current efforts, and you know, I'm not playing politics and I don't get involved in politics, but I do track the policies and the motives and what people are doing and the science. I'm involved in the science of things. And by the way, science and politics are often very closely linked. Science gets weaponized that, oh, well, this researcher published this stuff. And, you know, so we can come up with case studies to refute just about every argument that's out there. So we look at the bulk of the studies and try to wade our way through that. And I do a lot of that. I do a lot of reading, and there's a lot of scientific studies out there that really have to be put in their proper place, and they can't be expanded upon. But when it comes to federal lands management, everybody wants to keep that land federal lands. I have spoken to our representatives, to our governor. I know what they're trying to do, and I know for a fact that they have no desire whatsoever to turn public lands into private lands. Okay, that's a total fallacy. Sorry to be that strong about it, but that's the case. Okay, they want to make management of federal lands tie in closer to the needs of the state. Okay, so if you have little towns like Troy or whatever that are dependent on the resources that come off of those federal lands, then they're trying to make those resources more available, because otherwise it's tax dollars, PILT money, payment in lieu of taxes, that gets sent to these towns and turns them into welfare towns, if you will. We would much rather have people using those resources wisely and carefully. So if there's a rock mine or a mineral mine going in, we have now some pretty stringent federal protocols, and we have state people to weigh in. I mean, so there's people proposing to put mines in certain places, and the local population is coming out in swarms opposed to it.
Right.
And that is the way the process should work in my mind. Okay. So, I mean, I'm not a timber—
Everybody has a place at the table.
Right. I'm not a timber beast. I mean, I love natural areas, wilderness areas, big trees, forests, but I'm also a realist, and I don't want to see vast landscapes burn down. I mean, every day I look at Lolo Peak, and it really, really annoys me to see what happened there. It was not necessary for that to happen there. So we're trying to do a better job, and there are multiple different models in there. And I would encourage people to get away from this desire to think the absolute worst of both parties. You know, oh, well, the Democrats are, you know, just want to let the United States be flooded with immigrants, and the Republicans want to privatize private land. You know, none of those are true. We're trying to use science and advance our land management to better meet the needs of people. And sometimes that requires taking a step back and instigating a reform. I'm very hopeful that the Forest Service reform will work. I know that it's going to be costly, but the Forest Service has become an entity that we can't afford. It's not an efficient entity, and it's not meeting the needs of the state populations. And so we need to have, to manage a local ecosystem, you have to have local input and local knowledge.
Where will that change come from within the Forest Service? Is it going to take from the top down, from the bottom up? How?
Well, it is coming from the top down.
Right.
I mean, so Chief of the Forest Service, Tom Schultz, has instigated some reforms, and he's not doing this in a vacuum.
Right.
And it's important that everybody review those and look at them and push back or say, yes, this is a good idea. I mean, it's going to be a messy process, but something needs to change because the way the Forest Service was operating was not effective.
Dr. Kolb, always a pleasure. Thanks for being with us today. We sure appreciate it.
Well, my pleasure. And parting word, you know, when we talk about the Forest Service, we like to talk about these federal entities as their own organism. It's individuals within there. So you might have a Forest Service district, you know, like Tim Love, good friend of mine, was a district ranger up at Cedar Lake, did a fantastic job with the local community.
All right. Mr. Nick, what's coming up on Monday's show, sir?
We're going to have open phones for the first half hour, and then it'll be the KGVO Book Club with Mirdad and Michael.
All right. And again, thanks so much to Dr. Kolb for sharing your expertise, and thanks for all your calls, everybody. We really appreciate it. Get out there and make it a great weekend, and we'll see you Monday.